Everybody's been a little taller. Excuse my voice. I had my head in the zucchini and the tomatoes, and I think I'm having an allergic reaction to those things. I want to thank Danetta and Marcia and Carolyn and the committee for inviting us to speak here today. At first, when we were asked, I went home to Dave and said, hey, you know, and he said, no. And I thought about it, and I started, like, picking, you know. And he said, yes, and I went, oh, crap, that means me as well. No offense, but that was my honest reaction at first. So, but I really am grateful to be here and to be in this lovely room with you people and to have heard all the things I've heard just in the last 24 hours. Thank you. As Carolyn said, I was born and raised in Bermuda. I lived there until I was 17 years old. My dad was also born in Bermuda, as was his mother and her parents. At the age of 19, my mother won a beauty contest. She was born in New York, Bronxville, New York, New York. She was Miss Yonkers Raceway, and the prize was a trip to Bermuda. And my dad bet the guys he worked with at the phone company that he could get a date with her. And he did. And he took her out on flying on an airplane and on boats and to all these restaurants, all courtesy of his friends. 21 days later, they were married. Yeah, that's where their life was. So, and life, you know, life for us was, you know, I can remember not a whole lot about my younger days, but I'll come back to that. We lived in a small house that my grandfather gave them when they got married. And we had nannies and people that took care of us as kids. And I had a 2-year-old brother, and I was less than a year old. And he went up to the top of a cliff by himself and fell through a hole in the cliff into the water and died. Everybody blamed everybody else. And nobody in the house would talk about it unless they were drunk. And when Bermuda, when somebody was drunk, they were hot. We called them full hot. They weren't, drunk was not the word we used. The full hot sounded nicer, I guess, to Bermudians, I don't know. But they never talked about it, so we really never understood what happened. Years later, being into genealogy and a little bit of stuff like that, I learned that my grandmother, my father's mother, was present when that happened. And there was a lot of questions around that. So there was a lot of guilt and shame and things like that that went on in the family. And again, I didn't understand that until I grew up. We lived in 4 different houses that we owned in Bermuda over the course of 17 years. We started out in the small house and then just got bigger and bigger, better neighborhoods and all that. It was all about the appearances for my parents. My mother had a real estate business she owned, so everything was a party. Whether it was a dinner party or a cocktail party, it was always a party. We started out with a little rowboat to go fishing. We had a motorboat. Then we'd go to different islands to go camping. And things just got bigger and better in their lives. As a child, we were to be seen and not heard. We were told that, you know, we had to dress the perfect way. I learned how to dance over swords, as a little Scotch dance, a kilt dance. But that was entertainment for them. That wasn't something. And I didn't know any different. I never protested or said that I shouldn't or couldn't or whatever. And so from there, life went on for us. My mother was probably the biggest influence in her alcohol drinking than my father, but they were both drunks. But she was the one that affected me the most. And as we got a little bit older and things started to change in my life, I felt like I had to be that perfect little person to please them. And that included making their drinks for them. I can remember as a kid making my grandmother's a rum, and she liked rum and milk. It was a Bacardi, but rum and milk. And I'd fix her a drink for her at night, and because I'd get a ginger ale. That was a treat. That was my reward for fixing a drink. And of course, she gets real drunk, and I'd have to put her to bed, but she couldn't walk. So I'd be, you know, trying to manage this. I was probably, I don't know, 8 years old when that happened. You know, a lot of different things as a kid happened. As I said before, I remember very little about my childhood and growing up. And there's a piece of a story to that, and I'll get back to that in a second. When I was about 8 years old, I was molested by my mother's stepfather. I went to my mother and told her. My mother said I was dreaming. And it didn't happen. I brought it up again when I was 15. And again, she said, I was dreaming. Years later, in a drunken stupor, she admitted she'd had that same dream. This program, through different things that have happened to me, taught me why forgiveness was important. Not excusing behavior, not accepting it, but forgiving. And that was a big part of what Al-Anon did to me. So anyway, go through and we're living, I'm in my teens now, I have two younger brothers, my parents are fighting all the time. Their idea of a fight was, you know, to get violent. I guess my father ended up with a black eye and stuff like that. My mother gave him black eyes and stuff like that. To me, it was pretty violent. And then she'd come and get in my bed, and my father would be yelling at me because he wanted her wherever she should be. So, you know, we went through, and, you know, comforting my brothers or explaining to them while all this was going on was pretty emotional for us. But by this time, my mother had decided that we grew up, I'm going to back up a step here. We grew up being taken to Sunday school in a Methodist church. They dropped us off every Sunday, we went to church, Sunday school. And then as time went on, the church people came to the house and wanted to know why my parents weren't coming to church. And my parents would sit there and, you know, oh, well. And I'm sitting there listening, and I knew they weren't going to church because the Methodists in Bermuda believed you shouldn't drink. And my parents were having a lunch party or party after church, and they were all drinking. And I told them that. So they left. I don't remember how much trouble I got in for that. But so about, you know, a few years later, I got involved. We started going to a Lutheran church with a bunch of kids that were friends of mine, and got real involved in it, a real good youth group. The pastor was wonderful and everything. So then my brother joined, and then my mother joined that church. My mother then had an affair with that Lutheran minister. I helped her get together and meet him in different places. Again, in retrospect, I look back at that and I'm thinking that was... anyway, he divorced his wife. My mother and father got a Mexican divorce real quick and easy. And we left Bermuda and came to the United States. I had visited the United States lots of times as a kid. Started when I was 2 years old. They put me on a plane, shipped me up to New York to see my grandmother. But I'd never lived here. So things like riding a school bus, understanding what American kids were, or kids here in this country were like versus what in this little world I lived in were like, was so different to me. I'd never been to a co-ed school, never been on a school bus. I mean, all these things that we had to learn. And that was fine for me. My brothers, their adjustment wasn't so easy. But one time, my first date here was with a guy that went to a private school, and it was a Halloween dance. And by then, my mother's married, now married to this Lutheran minister. So we go out to this Halloween dance, and we come home, and my mother and her husband are just full hot again, dancing around and singing and everything. I just thought that was normal. Didn't everybody do that? Yep. And I turn around, and this guy's walking out the door and leaving. And I'm thinking, why is he going? What's wrong? Didn't even dawn on me that what they were doing was not good behavior. So that was my first exposure to thinking maybe there was something questionable in the behavior that was going on in my house. 4 months later, the minister dies. This man, he was the one that helped me understand why I needed to forgive my grandfather. I didn't at that point in my life, but he explained it to me and talked to me about it. Because at 15, when I went to my mother and told her what had happened again, that's when, and I said to her, I was having a problem dating, you know, as a young person. I just couldn't get it. So he helped me through that. So I had a lot, and plus when they were married for that short amount of time, he brought some stability to our house where we had dinner as a family at the same table. The first time in my life. We'd never done that as kids. We were always made to eat, you know, before them and all this other stuff, unless we went out to dinner. So I had a lot of respect and loss when he died. So my mother started dating again and again. I was her helper. I would take her to bars to meet guys. She met somebody, I'd leave and go home because I had a license, I could drive. And then, you know, she brought a guy home one night that was... not very nice. He started yelling at me and calling me names, so he was asked to leave and helped to escort it out the door and fell down the steps and threw things through the milk. You have milk boxes? You put your milk in? He threw one of those through a glass window. So after the police were called, we thought it was funny. We didn't, you know, I marvel sometimes when I think about this stuff of my acceptance of all of those behaviors, because I thought they were normal. So my mother at that point in time decided maybe she'd let her friends fix her up with people. So they did, and the next guy she hooked up with was a Marine colonel, and she was going to move to Virginia Beach with my brother, and I said I didn't want to go. I was going to stay in Maryland. She said as long as I had a job and a place to live, I could stay. Well, I had lots of different jobs, and I had lots of different places to live, so I stayed in Maryland, and I never went back to my home or to live with my mother, my stepfather, or my that type of thing. And I, you know, I had lots of different people. I mean, 16 years, I dated different guys and did a lot of different things. But mostly I was the designated driver. If people didn't drink, I didn't want to be around them because they weren't any fun. I didn't know how to operate with people that were sober. I only knew how to operate with drunks. And mainly that was probably because I wanted to take care of them or fix them or what. And that fixing wasn't taking the alcohol away. That was my responsibility and my job. That's how I was raised. So we move forward, you know, and I've been on my own for a while, and I meet this wonderful man that I fall in love with, and he doesn't mind that I don't drink, and I don't mind if he drinks all the time. It just doesn't bother me. It's just the way it was. And we dated for a couple of months, and after 4 months, he asked me to marry him, and I said yes. 4 months later, we were married. Got married in used a clubhouse at an apartment complex I had lived in. Real low budget type of affair because my parents, again, weren't going to contribute. And part of that argument goes to, you know, I don't talk about my dad much. And part of that is because his feeling in our lives or his presence in our lives was as much as I wanted it to be. But part of that was, you know, in a divorce, my mother got all the business, she got the house, he had nothing. So, but my mother made us feel like he didn't support us. And I got to see the divorce decree one time, and it was real specific. And that's when I came to understand and learn he didn't do anything to deserve the disdain and the sometimes hate that I had for him. So there was part of me, again, the forgiveness part of that I had to learn to do that with my dad. So anyway, excuse me, I'm going to take a drink of water before I run out of voice here. So Dave and I, excuse me, I didn't mean to say your name. Dave and I get married. it was a beautiful wedding. You know, we had it catered by one of the local bars, but we had the best booze you could have. And that was fine. It was great. Really good pictures and good fond memories of that. Within a few months, we found our dream house. I'm pregnant, and we have a baby who screams all the time. That's all she did was scream. You know, I threatened to put her in a mailbox and send her someplace, and none of that helped. But I went downtown, and he told the story a little earlier. He was down in the basement drinking. I went down there and apologized for causing him to drink. Because if I acted or accepted or, you know, it was different, that he wouldn't drink as much as he did. It was my fault. And he told me, and his word, damn right. That's what he said, and I believed him. But it was just, again, you know, there's so much we learn once we get here that we didn't know before. So we move forward in our journeys, and we have a son 2 years later. I quit my job and stay home and do daycare for 7 kids in the house. And that was great for me. It was a perfect solution to a whole lot of things, being at home. But the drinking had gotten to the point where Dave would go down to the basement every night. On maybe special occasions, he'd buy me wine coolers, like 4 of them. I'd drink my 2 wine coolers and go up to bed real quick before he came up, because I knew he was going to be there a while. close the door, and pretend to be asleep. Or I'd go in the bathroom and hope and pray that he would die. Thank God that that did not happen. I did occasionally hope that the state police might tell me that that happened, though. But I'd only think those thoughts in the bathroom, because I think any other place in the house wouldn't have been acceptable to think that kind of thing. I don't know what was wrong with that, but maybe I'm just trying to justify it. Don't you look at me like that. So anyway, we move forward, and, you know, we come to this point in our lives where, you know, I'd get up in the morning and I saw him come in with, you know, 2 six-packs of beer, and my wine coolers ended up to be a trash can full of beer cans. And I'm thinking, where did they come from? I think I was naive. I'll say I was naive. And I would think, I don't understand. Years later, I found out he was also medicating with vodka down there. I didn't know that. We had a house full of liquor, and it was downstairs. I never even dawned on me that that was an issue. I knew that his brother had a problem. He was in something called AA. I didn't know what AA was. And we weren't allowed to drink around him. But we sort of were like standoffish from him at that point in time. I just didn't get it. And I keep saying that, not because I feel like I'm stupid or something, but I wonder, how can you get to be 39 years old and not know what alcoholism is? You know, it was in my life since I was born, and I just didn't see it. But I did what I needed to, I think. I saw it when I was supposed to see it. I have to accept that. So anyway, he gets into this program called AA, starts going to meetings. He could do 3 or 4 meetings a day and night. One meeting he made at night was at 11 o'clock at night. He'd go to this meeting, and that was fine. I was just happy he was doing, I was supportive and encouraging of anything he wanted to do to get sober, because I knew we were going to help him. He was doing this for my kids, his kids, and me. And then, you know, then the big news, he wasn't doing it for me. You know, that's when the big book came home, read the chapter to the wives. Needless to say, I did not want to read the chapter to the wives. I thought that, by then I was angry, because if he wasn't doing it for me, who was he doing it for? Needless to say, I found out, and I understood what he meant, but I didn't read that chapter for probably 4 or 5 years. I couldn't. That book was written 13 years before Al-Anon got started. But he did say I had to go to Al-Anon. So I went to a Friday night meeting in Manchester. I walked in. There was several people sitting there, one man, the rest were women, all had white hair. And I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, okay. But I felt really comforted by these people. They were very welcoming. They made me feel like I belonged there. They encouraged me to talk, which I didn't want to do, because I'd grown up in a house that was all secrecy. We never talked about what went on at home growing up or in my family when we got married. You didn't talk about it. You didn't tell the neighbors, you didn't tell your friends or anybody. Now, if you have young kids, they're going to tell everybody. But that's different, okay? That wasn't how I was taught. So I start going to Al-Anon and meet these people, and they did. They said, keep coming back, and I did. I went every Friday night to that meeting. Occasionally, we'd go to other meetings, and that was like date night. And that was great. It was still a good time. We had fun doing it. And as time passed, and I grew more in my understanding of Al-Anon, somebody said to me, you have to know somebody to come to Al-Anon. Anybody can go to AA, but you have to know somebody to go to Al-Anon. And I figured I'd finally met that person that made the difference for me to go to Al-Anon, because that changed my life. That's when I learned about forgiveness and learning to move on from where I had been as a child or young adult or now a grown-up person. Once I got into Al-Anon, I can remember sitting at this meeting and them having a group conscience. I had no idea. All the words they used initially, I had no clue what it meant. But I'm going to stay, and because they're being nice and I'm being polite. They have a group conscience, and they said, we need a secretary. I say nothing. I can't type. Okay? So I'm out. And this woman, Thelma, she's 90-some years old when she passed away recently. She looked, she just kept staring at me. And I'm trying, you know, I want to climb the wall. She said, you could be the secretary. I said, okay. I still, you know, I mean, we had a secretary in that meeting, but they didn't say this is the secretary. So I didn't understand. But I learned these, you know, slowly. And I think that hopefully when new people come into Al-Anon, we try to educate them a little more now and explain that what these positions are. So I got involved in service. I was a secretary. I got to be the group rep. I got to be a district rep. I did a lot of different things over the years. It took a while. It didn't just happen. And a lot of times some of the positions I took was because I was angry at the person that was doing them. Wrong motive. And you end up apologizing when you do that. But I did, I have to admit that that's what I did. And it was all good for me as well because it was growth for me. And from learning about the traditions in this program, you know, we're going to bounce forward now for several years. There was a serious medical condition one of my children had, required brain surgery. And, you know, we were devastated. You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to, you know, and you're bouncing back to the behaviors from before that you want to fix and control this. That's when let go and let God kicked in. And I knew I was not a brain surgeon. There was nothing I could do but trust my higher power and this man that we had turned her over to would take care of and this problem for us. And we are blessed that he did a good job. As far as I'm concerned, he did a good job. So, you know, we go forward a little bit more from there. And again, these traditions for me gave me a balance. Somebody said, you know, in Al-Anon, I think it happens in AA as well. But if somebody asks you to do something, you say yes. So somebody called me up on the phone and said, would you be a support group? I went, okay. I didn't know what that meant at that point in time, but the condition that my daughter had required a lot of information to be collected and things like that. I had never talked to another person that had a similar situation. But saying yes to this, within hours, somebody called me with a child with the same thing. So using the traditions to apply to building a support group, which I knew nothing about, we grew the support group, turned in, it was a nonprofit, got to travel all over the world, meet all these doctors and people that helped the group to grow. But if I wasn't in Al-Anon and I didn't have the base of people that I had and the traditions, I never would have done it because I couldn't have. They gave me what I needed. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't going into my group and support group and talking to Al-Anon. That was strictly there. But because of the education I got in this program, I was able to do that. And that was a very important part of my life when I did it. So we go forward more from there. And as life goes on, you know, we go, like, you know, and listening to my husband share this morning, 11 years ago was pretty rough. Midlife crisis is not pretty. And if you don't, I guess, talk about it, or you just try to move forward because you're strong with it, it doesn't make for a pretty picture. But the one thing that this program gave me, thank God, was the ability to forgive. And when he asked for forgiveness, I was able to say, I did forgive him. And I knew in my heart from what I'd learned in my Al-Anon program that once I said that, I meant it. I couldn't go back. There was no saying, well, I didn't really mean it. Or, you know, I think that's the one thing that's funny. You know, I mean, if somebody asks it, says they're sorry or then they're sincere, if you go back and bring it up again, that's on you, not them. And that's something I have to keep remembering. I think sometimes I lose. I mean, in Al-Anon, I think we have a lot more slips than people in AA because we don't count them the same way. But there are times, you know, there are traits that in my character defects, the biggest one that can rankle other people, doesn't bother me, is sarcasm. And that really can set, you know, things off. And sometimes, initially when it would happen, I didn't hear it in my voice. I didn't hear it in a tone of voice or in how you looked at somebody, but that would just set somebody over the top. And once I recognized it, then I was able to deal with it. So I've been in Al-Anon probably 15 years, maybe 16 years. And all of a sudden, one of my kids, my daughter is, she's sitting here, so I will say that. I'm sorry, daughter. Is getting drunk a lot. But I'm not going to tell her dad. She's not going to tell him. I'm not telling him because I don't want him to get mad or be disappointed in her behavior or any of that type of stuff. And so she calls the house one night. Everybody's asleep. I answer the phone. So we had regular phones in your house. She told me she was, you know, what was going on, where she was and everything. Like, she was scared. She was crying. I said, are you with somebody? Yes. I said, okay, call me in the morning. And I hung up and I turned over and went back to sleep. Let go and let God worked really well that night. Except she called back. And when she called back, woke everybody in the house up. Then I had to tell her dad what was going on. That probably was one of the hardest things I did because I know I'd messed up by not telling him when it first started. But yet, when we both collectively used this program, his and mine together, we were able to, I would say, make a unified front for the two of us that we could say to her, okay, here's the conditions. We didn't use the words conditions, but here's what we expect. And I am grateful, again, if I hadn't been in here, if I hadn't had the support I had from the people that were around me, I still would have been covering for her, making excuses, and she'd probably be dead. And I don't say that any other reason, but I knew how she was, what she was doing and where she was, because she told me everything. You know, so it sort of like was one of those scales that, I'm glad she told me, but by the same token, it's probably the only reason that we were able to form this unified front and say to her, here's what we expect of you. If you want to live in our house, here are the, not conditions, there's a word I like to use, but I can't remember, I'm sorry. So needless to say, she found her way to sobriety, and her story is her story, and there's some funny pieces of it, because as parents, we fell right into her trap. You know, no offense to her, and she's sitting here, she knows, I'm not telling her something she hasn't heard me say before, but we did. I mean, she convinced us she should go to Disney for 9 months and work as an intern. She could live in an apartment with other kids that were underage. They didn't drink. Uh-huh. Yeah. So needless to say, when she came back from that is when she found her way into the program, her program, and she took care of all of that and did that what she needed to do. And she had some steps along or blocks along the way where she had to skip over things. But she found her way. And then Dave mentioned the story about my son and him being disrespectful. And part of that was, as the kids got to be older, teenagers, I said to them, if you're not coming home, just let me know. I wouldn't ask them where they were, who they were with. None of that mattered at that point. Just let me know you're safe and you're not coming home. Well, he decided he didn't have to do that. And I confronted him the next time, and that's when he started cussing. And this is, I never hear him cuss, but he was cussing at me. So that's when we again talked and asked him to move out. And, as Dave said, that was harder for him than it was for me, because I was angry at that point in time. Dave was disappointed. Through this program and the growth that I have gotten personally, I have found that life has given me all the rewards and things that I never could have gotten. I was able to forgive my grandfather. I was able to forgive my mother. But there was, and again, my mother died in 2010, I think, 11, yeah. And when she died, she was cremated. I put her in the closet because that's where she belonged. And I left her there several years, because I couldn't bring myself to do anything else with her. I mean, I love, it's a very confusing thing to me that you can love somebody so much, but yet hate them at the same time. So I needed to come to terms with that. And eventually, because of this program, I was able to. And she, you know, we pulled her out of the closet, and I put her in a nice Bible box I got from Goodwill. And she was buried with her husband at Quantico Marine Corps, where there's a cemetery, thank you. That place where you bury ashes and everything. Yeah. And my brothers were there. My brothers were there and everything like that. I do have two younger brothers. They both probably, I would say, have problems with alcohol or drugs. That's not my call or my story. For a number of years now, the middle brother, the one closest in age to me, he and I didn't speak because he got nasty. He started getting a personality similar to my mother's, and I just couldn't be around it. So I just stepped away. I wasn't going to argue or try to defend or anything like that. But in recent years, just like the story about my mother and my grandfather, all those, I had to learn to forgive him. He wasn't asking for forgiveness, but I had to learn to be able to forgive him. And we've started to re-engage again and to talk and form a relationship, which is incredible to me because I never thought I would speak to him again. Doesn't mean he's a better person, but he's working on it. He is trying, and just because I'm trying, I think. That's why that's going on. Anyway, I'm trying to think. I don't think there's anything specific that I've left out of that journey other than this family here. You all are more of a family to me than my own family ever was. There are things within my life that I would not readily talk about or discuss that I would never talk about with my brothers or other family members because they wouldn't get it. They're not in Al-Anon or they're not in a program like this. And so I feel stronger as a person because of what this program has given me, and that's you. And I consider you all my family, whether it's here or in any other place I've been to an Al-Anon meeting. It's just amazing what this program can do if you let it, if you want it. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.